You're listening to Tranquility Tribe, episode one with Karen and Meg. We're exploring honest journeys through therapy and open-hearted conversations about our well-being. Today, we welcome Tiff, who will share her experience within her own therapy and how her incredible insights and inspirations may help to shed some light on the process of everybody's therapy. Hi, Tiff.
Hello.
How are you?
Good, thank you for having me.
Wonderful, wonderful. So let's just sort of jump in here and maybe just say, incredible process and thank you for coming. Where did it start for you?
Started about 14 years ago. Had a few traumatic experiences in life. And I think I kind of got on with life and not really processed stuff. And then got pregnant with my son and started suffering with anxiety.
It's interesting, isn't it? You know, you sort of got on with stuff. And I think that's pretty much the same as most of the people out there, really. You just sort of do it, experience it, and put it in a sack and carry it around with you. I mean, what was the sort of consequence of that for you?
Just like I say, this massive build-up of anxiety. And I think because one of the experiences was miscarriage, because I hadn't dealt with that grief.
Oh, dear.
Getting pregnant with my son really heightened them emotions and brought me back to when I was pregnant before. And then that was it. It all just was like massively impactful on my life.
Wow. And sort of how did you feel about thinking about this idea and this concept of therapy, you know, and all this emotion that's starting to come to the surface? I mean, how did you get from, you know, I need to go and really go and explore this a little bit, from I just feel overwhelmed by it? What was the middle part of that for you?
I think at first, I was just trying to avoid the anxiety, just get away from it. Didn't think about, you know, that I could work on that or change that or, you know. And I think it was just surviving. And I think when it gradually got worse and worse and worse, it got to where I was like, I need to go and get help for this.
Okay.
And it was that point where I was like, yeah, I've got to do something.
So what was your first pathway into maybe exploring how you could work with this? How did you end up, I guess, here today?
I went to the doctors. And because I was pregnant, they couldn't give me any medication.
Okay. Did you want medication?
I'm unsure, really.
Okay.
I think when I was pregnant, no, because I didn't take anything. But I think I just needed something to help, and I would have took anything, I think, for that. But then I went to the NHS, gave me some counselling, and I had 12 sessions with them.
How was that for you? Because quite short-term work,
yes,
isn't it?
Yeah, and obviously you don't get to choose your therapies. You just go in, meet your therapist first time, and you roll out then these sessions. But yeah, it did nothing for me, and I ended up going back into another 12 sessions, wanting 12 sessions.
So it sounds like, you know, your therapist is a really crucial element in providing that initial space for you to step into and feel comfortable in an uncomfortable way.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And that didn't sort of cut it then, is that what you're saying?
Yeah. And I think for me, it was I needed time. I needed that, you know, that freedom to explore everything that was going on. And because you have that short time limit, it's very, let's get something and like coping mechanisms or whatever in place, because you're going in 12 weeks' time.
I mean, how did that sort of leave you feeling? Because I think this is a very interesting, you know, I know we haven't sort of gone into this any deeper, but it's a very interesting discussion around What happens if you don't get on with your therapist? You've got a small amount of time. What does that actually leave you with then, being on the other side as a client? Does that leave you with, well, therapy's rubbish, or nobody's going to be any good, or, you know, this process doesn't work? Or, I mean, it conjures up just quite a lot of things for me that potentially might be there for people.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. I think it's, you question if that's the only therapy, you know, or is it worth going into again because you didn't work last time?
So it's very important, I think, to sort of be very mindful that maybe the person that you do get initially may not be the right person for you, but not to give up.
100%, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, how did you then enter into, I'm guessing, going for your next encounter?
Yeah, I went in for a consultation thing, a assessment. And then I met my private therapist and just went straight into going private sessions, which I knew were long-term. I had all the time I needed.
Did that make a massive difference, just psychologically and knowing you had space?
100%, yeah, definitely. Yeah, because it wasn't rushed. I knew I could take my time. And I knew I had this support because at that time I needed the support, and I knew that I could have that support as long as I wanted that support. So in a way it was a bit of a sense of control.
Yeah.
Sure.
When I felt completely out of control.
Yeah.
Because that vulnerability, that vulnerable space that you're in to have to go seek therapy and then not gelling with your therapist and feeling rushed.
Yeah.
So, yeah, to have that control put back onto you and that journey of empowerment.
Yeah, because I've after 12 sessions and you're not feeling that stable security in yourself, you know that you're going to go and you're going to be on your own again.
Sure.
You know. Mm-hmm.
Just out of curiosity, I suppose one of the things that's coming up for me at the moment is sort of confidentiality, really, in terms of if you're going into the NHS, there's a very different set of confidentiality that potentially there is if you're going into private practice, for example. Did that affect you in any way? Did you feel that this was going to go on to your clinical records with the NHS and not with a private therapist? Because I think sometimes people don't want that on their records for a number of different reasons, really.
Yeah. I don't think I ever thought about that because I didn't know much about that, if I'm honest.
It's a really good point to raise, because actually I didn't know that. I've never considered that, actually.
No, not at all.
Yeah, that would go onto your records.
Absolutely, and I think certainly when it comes to people accessing, organisations accessing your records, if there is some sort of diagnosis there of depression, anxiety, and certainly in terms of the workplace, There have been times that I'm aware of where employers have asked to access your medical records in order for you to apply for jobs.
Yeah,
it's an interesting conversation to have, and just to think about the little things that really you wouldn't ordinarily be aware of, I think.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, definitely. And I think you don't know. I think when you're in that mindset as well, you just really want to reach out for help.
Well, you're very vulnerable.
You don't think of anything like that. You don't think of what does this mean or that mean or what therapy they're doing or, you know, whatever that would be.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And did you look at different types? Because there's, so the CBT, isn't there, person-centred?
Yeah. Is there? At the time, no.
No.
No. And I think obviously with the NHS, it's more CBT, isn't it? So,
very short-term, solution-focused. Let's get you out there and going again, really. There's not a lot of emphasis on looking at where this is originated from, is there?
No.
And so what was the process like? So you've been to see, forgive me for going back, I'm just sort of systematically thinking of things as they come up, really, as you walk into this. So, you know, you're sort of starting with the therapist. Yes, you've got your support. What were the things that made you feel I suppose, safe, held,
yeah,
heard, valued. You know, all those those things that are coming up for me. How did you know they were there for you to be able to walk with your therapist, really? What were the indicators?
I think going to a nice room and with, like, you know, candles in, a little bit of music, just really soft, you know, decor. Yeah. It just felt really cozy and comfortable. And like I say, the time as well, I knew that I wasn't rushed. So I knew that I had the time, so we could pace that to what I needed. Just like, and then that really made me feel seen.
Okay.
Because it wasn't this quick, right, you're out the door next, another one in. It made you feel that kind of personal approach.
Okay. So, and you know, you talk about a lot of the sort of ambience and what you need. But in terms of, I suppose for anybody listening now, what might some of the things be that they would need to sort of maybe be aware of that makes them feel safe from the actual individual that they're going to see?
Probably, like, you know, how long have they been doing that for, or being a therapist for, or qualifications, maybe, if you in, you know, like I say, I wouldn't have even asked stuff like that, you know.
No.
But I don't know, I just think
something about
I think for me I just got a vibe. I think the person was very open, very honest, shared a little bit of maybe a bit of self-disclosure if it needed that, or if it, you know, if it was appropriate. I just felt like it was, I don't know, just, it just was comfortable. Like, you just, it was the vibe for me.
The vibe is the word, isn't
it? Yeah, really calm, you know, and very open and honest, authentic. Just, yeah, the whole relationship just really gelled. And, yeah, it was just nice. Completely different to what I had before.
Yeah, that's really lovely.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
That must have been really empowering you, for you, thinking, right, okay, I'm here, I can...
Yeah. And interestingly enough, the other therapist through the NHS was a male. So even that, you know, did that make a difference for me? Because my therapist was a female. So it's just, is that different, you know? Is that important to anyone else, you know?
Yeah, I suppose talking about certain things, that, you know,
Definitely,
very key.
Yeah. So,
which sort of raises the question around choice, doesn't it, in terms of gender with therapists? And I wonder how much choice you have within maybe more of a clinical setting. If you're on a waiting list as opposed to going private. And one of those is a real big consideration of who you do want to see, really.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And I think some now, you know, you can have free sessions, introductory sessions, have a little shop around for your therapist, you know, get the right therapist, you know. I think we all go to the hairdressers or have your nails done.
Yeah.
You go around, don't you? You get, you know, word of mouth, or they're good, you know.
Yeah.
But we don't have that in the NHS where you have that choice. You're just like, you got to go to that person whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
It's very mechanical, isn't it? And we're looking very much at a more organic and kind of self-empowered approach to personal well-being.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So how did that progress? Because I'm very interested in the whole process of really, you know, if you're standing and watching this unfold in front of you now, how did you sort of progress into just growing, really?
I think the first part was connecting back with my emotions. I obviously trying to avoid anxiety for so long, disconnected myself from any sort of emotion because it was just too hard to cope with. So I think building that relationship with myself again, where I was accepting of what emotions were coming up, was needed at the start before I even entered into anything much, you know, deeper. because it's important that I could release the emotions if I needed to.
Yeah.
And I think that was, again, you know, the therapist knew that I needed that. So just that at the start was so important.
Mm.
And then...
Sounds like you had quite a bedding in process. Mm.
Yeah, I was going to say it's like foundations, isn't it?
Yeah,
mm.
Yeah, definitely. Mm. Yeah.
What do you think would be the danger if somebody rushed you or you felt rushed into that process too quickly?
I think my anxiety would have been way worse.
Okay.
I think it just would have really got worse. So I think it does in therapy gets, you know, more as you're going into it, it does get harder before it gets easier. But
yeah,
at least I had something that I knew I could release some of that and cope with that if it was coming up. So
yeah,
because pace sounds very crucial to me in this, especially, you know, when you've got huge amounts of energy that's around, you don't need dropping in that quick, and then you can't get out of a pit.
100%, yeah.
Yeah, because it can feel like a pit, I suppose, can't it, really?
Yeah. You know. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so definitely you need that kind of outlet, so then you can work on that, and then slowly go into everything else then, talking about things and, you know, exploring feelings around that and... You know, really gain into what was causing the issue.
Mm. Sounds almost like a tree. You start walking, you know, and we've got this trunk, and as you start to move into this more, you sort of start to explore all the different branches that are
definitely
sort of going up and out into the world. And then I suppose, you know, if you're going down the trunk into the roots, that takes us really into the sort of core foundations that create this very stable tree, or not.
Yeah,
definitely. It's an interesting metaphor, isn't it?
Yeah. Because I think if you know, you go in with, for in my example, you go in with one thing and something else comes up, and you're walking down different paths, and you're working on different things, and so it is good.
I suppose in looking at the analogy of tree, there isn't anything separate because everything connects to everything else, doesn't it? So no matter what path you venture down, really, all roads will lead somewhere.
Yeah.
And it's a real unfolding process, isn't it?
Yeah.
This is that word again, organic. It's so organic. It's so personal.
Yeah. Very personal, yeah.
And I think there's something about sustained change for me here about pace. And this whole personal space that allows you to be to have your own autonomy, but at the same time the choice to go how far you choose to or not on your own journey, really. And I also think, you know, that there's everybody does this journey very differently. It's a very unique journey. Everybody's how they enter that journey is coming at a different place. Some people have already started to explore the journey. Some people, it's very, very new. Some people come, do a bit and go. Other people come and they do some and then you don't see them for a while. They come back and do some more. Other people come and go, right, I'm just gonna walk the path.
Yeah.
And that's it, really, you know. It's such a unique individual experience.
And I think with, like you were saying before about... being on this own, your own journey, I think, you know, we can be rescued by other people, can't we, sometimes, and we can lean on other people a lot. But when you're in therapy, it's such a lonely journey because it's only you in that room with your therapist, and you're dealing with that, and only you can, you know, work on that for you. And I think it builds you then to feel more kind of resilient in yourself, and you just grow much stronger as a person.
Yeah, it takes real courage to firstly kind of admit that you're not okay and you need some help, then to initiate that and go to that very first appointment, then to go through that process and feel like, oh gosh, this hasn't really helped. Mm. Again, even more courage to take another step and say, no, I'm going to look for someone else and try again. Mm. So, I really just admire that in you there. Well done for that. Yeah. And I think that's a really useful message for people to hear, because it is very lonely. There's no pats on the back apart from yourself and your therapist, hopefully. But the rewards you reap from that empowerment, the emboldening.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So was there a point that you reached where you thought, oh, you know what? I'm starting to feel the benefit here.
Yeah. I think throughout the journey, because it was a long, and I think you gradually had little glimmers throughout. So it was like, oh, I can go in a shop without wanting to do a runner out of it. Or, you know, I can sit in the car in traffic and not feel like I'm trapped in this car. Mm-hmm. So it was like little bits, but then it was went into bigger bits. So it was like I went to university and doing that was a big step. And
I mean, that's huge. My goodness.
Yeah. And then this year, I went on a plane again, and I hadn't flown in 12 years.
Wow.
You know, so it was the small steps first, but the small steps led me to big things.
Yeah. Did you have a way of documenting your journey or mapping it for yourself, or was it just?
Yeah, I used journals throughout.
Right.
And I still use journals now.
That's a good tool.
I've got 14 books in the loft.
Oh, wonderful.
14 books. So, yeah, I've got all that.
Yeah.
But I haven't read back any of them.
No.
So I even don't read them back when I've written. So I don't know.
So it's the act of writing.
Yeah.
And maybe it's not for reading them back quite yet. Mm. Maybe that's something in the long, long distant future when
I'm 80.
Yeah, and you go, blimmin' heck.
Don't get me boots out.
Yeah. When you're writing your biography.
Look at this life.
Yeah. That's really interesting then. Is that a tool that you picked up during your therapy? Or just
It was just a way for outside of the counselling space that I could still have that voice, still connect with myself. If there's any emotions that need coming up, I could release them through that and look at any patterns and anything that was coming up. It just really helped. It's such a really good tool. I love journaling.
It's like a project book, but on yourself.
Yeah.
Really good.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
Really good.
In terms of your self-worth then, I would like to gauge from where you felt you were before you started this journey to now.
Mm.
How has the journey contributed to you and your relationship with yourself?
Massively. I'm a different person. Mm. I was very quiet, hidden, a bit scared, I think. Before.
Are you whispering?
I know. Am I scared now? But I think I wasn't very confident, didn't really have a voice with anything, where now I will have a voice.
Do you find that helps you to balance that sort of internal, external world?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it just makes you feel safe when you've got a voice.
Mm.
You can put boundaries in, you can, you know, voice what you need to, and people know where they stand with you, really, don't they? And it just makes you feel so much more secure in yourself.
And it doesn't take too many life circumstances to shut that voice down, does it? So
Definitely.
Transparency is crucial, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, and it's really odd when, like you said, when you've had them life experiences to kind of pull yourself out of that, because you're thinking, well, that happened last time or whatever, and that's what made me close down in the first place. Yeah. So then it's really odd to kind of drag yourself out of that.
Yeah. Mm.
What was your sort of experience of people, you know, in your immediate family, friends, when you started to really grow and heal? Was did they notice you? Were they discouraging you, encouraging you?
They were definitely encouraging me to, because they knew how much I suffered. I think in that in the time of counselling, I think in parts of it, I would be a bit closed off because of what I was going through. Because like I say, it's very lonely. You don't go to your family and friends and go, this is what I've been talking about in counselling. Yeah. Pull up a seat. Because you don't do that, you know.
Yeah.
Because it's very so personal. And I think when you're kind of trying to work on stuff, you just need that sometimes space for you to sit back and just go, right, let me just have my time. Work on this. And then I'll go back out in the world.
Yeah.
You know.
I think it's a very important point about time, because I think at the moment, one of the big issues I imagine is happening is we've got so much pressure out there in the world. And people are having to chase all the time. Time. Which means actually it almost feels like your soul never almost catches up with you somehow. And with this process, time is an incredibly important commodity in being able to sit, connect, really experience that energy that you have just been starting to allow to surface. But equally, you know, it's important to be able to process those experiences that you've just gone through. And that's really hard, I think, when, you know, you've got such a very pressurized world. And if you, you know, you're coming out of therapy, you've got to go to work. Where do you get space to be able to really, to anchor into you?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it's definitely having that time for a bit of self-care, isn't it? And I think that is really hard, you know, because when you've had washing, looking after the kids, work, and then you're thinking, oh, I've got another thing on my list, self-care. Can't be bothered for that. You know, it's another thing on the list when really actually that one thing that's on that list that you do need to do
should be at the top.
Top of the list. It's the greatest gift you can give yourself. Is
because
that
then that will help balance you out for the rest of the other stuff on the list.
Yeah. But I think, you know, it's not uncommon for everybody to put themselves at the bottom of the list and get everything done first before me, and then I can sit down. But unfortunately, everything else continues all the time.
Yeah, definitely.
And there's never a time as the two sit.
No, no, and especially with phones and stuff. And I always say, you know, when you're on an airplane and they tell you to put a mask on, they always tell you to put your own on first. Before you help others.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Very important.
And
yeah,
you know, you should think about that when you're stressed out.
And especially busy mums, you know, I see it a lot with my friends and my family, and it's everything for everybody else and themselves last. And that's manageable for a certain amount of time.
And social media pressures, you know. That's not, you know, skirt over the old social media.
Well, I agree. I was about to say that.
Gym, they got people working out, and then you got the kids, and then, you know, and people are going on holiday and doing this and that, and you're like, oh.
Yeah. Do you find
I can't catch up with all them things.
Yeah. No. Do you feel like that's been something that's influenced you? Or
I think for me, it's a good distraction, the phone.
Yeah.
I know when I'm on my phone a lot.
Yeah,
that's when I'm avoiding stuff, or I'm not sitting with myself. When really, when I'm doing that, I'm like, right, come on.
Yeah, and it's a great tool to monitor that, isn't it? You know when you're scrolling.
Yeah,
you've got to be there saying, hang on a minute, what's coming up in me that I'm just totally avoiding and throwing it? Because it's so easy, you know, you're getting this dopamine hit. It feels better. Yeah. It's far easier to scroll through your phone than it ever is to go,
get your journal out.
Yeah, and also just be present with yourself.
Yeah.
Really, what's going on with me? You know, do I feel like I've got energy in my chest or in my head, or, you know, am I uncomfortable? You don't even allow yourself to sort of sit back into you, do you, a lot of the time?
Yeah, definitely. And I think your energy, and if your thoughts go around in your head constantly, that phone, it'll replace that, won't it? You're like, look at this video on nothing.
That's it.
It is bad, really, the phones.
It is.
You know, I think you've got to catch it.
I think you're right. So how did that help you in your professional life then?
Like I say, I went to university and I became a counsellor and
Incredible.
I loved doing the self work, you know, all on myself, and I loved it.
Oh, such
I think I was a bit obsessed, really, but
this is a good thing to be obsessed with.
So
brilliant. So so you went to uni and juggled that with being a mum as well.
I got me redundant. I started and I was part time anyway working, and then I got me redundant as it was just going in the final year that I needed the time.
Right.
Yeah, universe gives you everything. You know?
Blessing
in disguise.
Yeah, and then I just did that.
Yeah.
But yeah.
How amazing. So how long have you been counselling?
I think it's about 4 years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Just gone dead quick.
And tell me how, you know, your journey through your own personal discovery and development, how much has contributed to you being the most amazing therapist that you are?
You are. I think it's allowed me to see the other side, and I completely understand how difficult it is to walk through that door, you know, and come into therapy and, you know, going through my journey, you know, the understanding of what it takes, what people need, you know, the pace, the being heard, the space to be held, and, you know, and I don't think I would have been able to learn that just from a classroom. I think I really knew that because I'd been there.
Yeah.
And I think that is just so different.
Yeah.
You know, I can really sit with my clients and kind of, I know, you know, I get this, I get it.
Yeah, it's that lived experience, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
And I think they do say you can only take your client to the depth you're at yourself, can't you? Which is...
Yeah.
I think that's very true.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So the more you do, and it's a beautiful dualistic process, isn't it, of, you know, enabling people to heal, but they actually then, I guess, trigger you as a therapist as well, really.
Yeah.
So you're growing, they're growing, everybody's growing.
It's amazing.
An amazing tree.
Yeah.
What are some of the kind of barriers, common barriers that you see people... putting up for themselves or encountering that stop them on this therapeutic journey?
I think sometimes, you know, there's a thought that's come up recently is I think age as well. Ah. Like the generational of actually accessing counselling because that's not what we do.
Oh, that's really interesting.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that I've had that thought recently.
It's that stiff upper lip. Yes. Oh, yeah, I'm all right. I'll just crack on.
Yeah. Where I think you get a lot of young people because we talk about it more.
Yeah.
It's very open. It's in schools now. Counsellors are in schools, you know. It's more accessible, I think, now.
It's shameless.
Yes, that's the good word. Yes, definitely.
Shameless.
Yeah.
Whereas before, I think there was a lot of associations with psychiatry. Mm. There was something wrong with you. Mm. You're not perfect. You've got to go and talk to somebody.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you've only got to sort of look at our history around sort of psychiatry and some of the institutions where at the turn of the century, women were put in there just because they'd got epilepsy.
Wow.
You know, prior to that, you'd possibly put in some sort of institution because you were clever and you could read and write as a woman.
Mm. Yeah. Gosh. Yeah.
So you can imagine why this sort of stigma would build up generationally of being, and of course we've had two world wars as well, you know, you've got to be very strong and, you know, stoic and get through this, which I get.
Yeah.
But where it's bringing almost, it feels to me in society, more, or we're trying to sort of get more back into being human and being present and more accepting of difference.
Yeah.
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 Because that's incredibly crucial for me. It's very easy to lump everybody together and say you've all got to be perfect and you've all got to be like this. But actually, we all process things differently. Yes. You know, how we see the world is going to be different. You know, everybody's experience of growing up is unique to them. Yeah. So that it's very difficult to quantify actually what you mean by normal, because there is no such thing as normal.
Definitely, yeah. And like, you know, someone might come in with anxiety, and I've had anxiety, but we will have completely different experiences with that.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, like you said, it's just, there's no one who's the same.
Yeah.
You know, we're all so different.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that falls down then to the, you know, the shame of emotions.
Yeah. Yes.
Which, you know, again, we, you know, inherit.
Yeah.
Generationally.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it's working on that and acceptance of what comes up, you know, and with anger and, you know, crying and,
And just not feeling okay. It's okay to say, I don't feel okay. And that's a good starting point.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to have all the answers.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is such a good point you made about age there. I'm kind of thinking about my father-in-law and actually, gosh, he really could have benefited from some emotional support after he lost his wife. But I think he would never have even thought to access that.
Yeah. I know. It's really sad, that, isn't it?
It is.
It is sad.
But maybe it was also the sign of the times of where we've had to grow through. And, you know, we've gone from being quite a stoic, stiff upper lip, get on with it society to, unfortunately, now it feels like we're flapping in the wind a bit the other end, really. And there's a lot of room, I think, to find some middle ground and take some very important learning from both of those areas.
Yeah.
Because I don't think it's particularly useful to be flapping in the wind and not have any boundaries here. But equally, having too tight a boundaries is incredibly problematic, because you can't grow.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so it's the appropriateness.
Yeah. And I think balance is, we need that in everything. And
Yeah. I think you've got to go through this journey and find your balance point. Once you know your balance point, you'll actually know when you're off. And to get you back, it's actually getting to that point, because actually, unless you get to this point where you do the work, I'd say most people are not in balance at all.
Yeah.
Because they're just totally unaware of the depth and the layers that they've accumulated over time, really.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's that constant, I've got to keep on, keep going, keep moving.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Push it all away, box that up, and keep going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's easy to collude with that idea, isn't it, really?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And it almost feels like what we need is almost a revolution of change that brings about more presence. You know, we've got the phones, we've got the laptops, we've got everything outside of us that's drawing us away from who we are. And I think there's a lot of learning in that of why that's not particularly good. I mean, these things are an incredible thing. You know, it's like having a Britannica encyclopedia gone mad, which is great for learning, but it's not the learning that, unfortunately, this is drawing at the moment. It's the dopamine
and
fix.
The most important learning for our whole lives as individuals is who am I? What makes me tick? What makes my heart sing? And I think maybe we're not really taught that, and I think this is where therapy is just wonderful.
Yeah.
You can then really go in on yourself.
It's about joy.
Yeah.
Spontaneity, creativity. And actually what's happening in society is they're trying to remove creativity and joy and spontaneity. Yeah. So just be on your computer.
And choice.
Yeah. And choice, absolutely.
Choice comes down to the choice.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because everyone has a choice.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So if someone was, you know, sitting on the edge, umming and ahhing about going to therapy, is there any advice that you would give them?
Yeah, I think, you know, go and have a look around, and also try it. You know, what's the harm in trying it? You know, and you might go and you might fall in love with it, and you know,
maybe it's falling in love with yourself.
Yeah, 100%.
Actually,
yeah.
Not necessarily about falling in love with therapy, but falling in love with you, so that we have this idea that, you know, we want to be the best version of us for us, not for anybody else.
Well, you're building this relationship with yourself, you, aren't you? You know, you're with you. You're the only relationship probably you'll ever be with forever, until the day you die, you know.
And you do have to be your best friend, don't you?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So
how far do you feel like you've fallen in love with yourself?
I think that a lot. Yeah. But I think there is still work. Yeah, there is a work to be done. There's always work to be done, isn't there? You know,
it feels like a lifelong journey, really.
And I think it just goes deeper into that, and you know, maybe a deeper love. Mm. You know, because constantly working on certain, you know, things that come up, and especially in the work that I do, you know, it's like you say, being triggered and. Then you're like, right, give me my journal. let's go again.
Yeah.
Because I think we seem to forget, don't we, as much as we sort of come into this process. And most of the time people come into this process really quite distressed and just want the distress to go. This is a different type of journey. It's beyond the distress. But I think we forget very much. You know, if you're entering, starting this journey, let's say even at 35, for example, you've got 35 years prior to actually coming in. How much have you been influenced by your family, your peers, your experiences, how you've needed validation, how you're molded to be what you imagine is right, that everybody wants to like you and you need to belong. Yeah. There's huge amounts of things that have gone on that have got to this point without any blinking experiences that have caused us trauma.
Yeah, yeah.
On top of that.
Yeah, definitely.
It's almost like a shedding process, isn't it? Because, you know, one thing can be reflected back to you in a session and you're like, oh, my God, that's just dissolved a whole kind of outfit I've been wearing. The mask gone from that. Yeah,
and we're always changing, aren't we?
Yes.
You know, from children, you know, you go uni or college, you're in a different kind of world there. And then if you have kids, you're a different, you know, you're then a mom. Yeah. You're like constantly evolving and being a different person, aren't you? And it's, you know, and for not do anything.
I know.
Figure that out of where you're navigating the whole of your life.
Yeah.
I think it's very easy as well if you have sort of locked a lot of stuff in to almost beat yourself up, think, I've got to just get there. Let me just get it done. And it's not about getting it done. It's allowing yourself to soften to get to know you. It's not about getting there. Because where is there? Mm-hmm. Where do we actually get? Yeah. We don't. Yeah. We just walk.
That's it.
And everything's that fast, isn't it? We're racing to get everywhere.
We are. And it, like the dopamine hits, like we want instant gratification. We want solutions. We want to press this button and right, my mental health crisis is resolved now. That's been ticked off. But it's a real change of attitude that we need to, slow your pace down. And it is a journey.
And sit in the uncomfortable.
Sit in the,
because that's where the growth is. Yeah. Sitting
absolutely.
In that.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And not subscribing to the pressure of just get it done and get on with life. That's a massive one I find with lots of people. Because have I got time for this? Oh, my God, what am I doing next?
Yeah, the long list of to-dos.
Yeah, you're right, which is taking us back to what you said earlier, isn't it, really? Have I got time? I'm at the bottom of the list. You know, come on, get on with it so I can just get on with life. And actually, the ironic bit is, let me get on with life. You're actually stopping living. You're just doing. And there's a big difference between doing and existing and living and being.
And realizing you're the most important person in the whole of your life.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Because it's your life.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
But we're so seduced, aren't we, in childhood, I think, that we just get swept away with so many ideas and notions and beliefs and, you know, who we imagine we have to be in order to belong.
Like the constructed versions of ourselves, like, oh, that's me, that's the hat I wear, and that's the trajectory I'm on.
Mm.
And then when you're a few years down there, you suddenly think, oh, actually, I'm not there. And actually, is that even what I want anymore?
Yeah.
So if you're not continuously evaluating, you can get stuck on a road that you didn't even want to be on.
Yeah, definitely.
And life's very short.
Yes.
It just passes us by very, very quickly. And I think the very sad thing is going along there and getting to a point in your life where you think, crying out loud, I've got less years left to live than I've already lived. And actually, when have I ever stopped and gone, how the devil have I got to this point? Because that's where all the nourishment is, the wonder, the amazement. You've got to stand still because, you know, we go through all these different experiences and it's a bit of a waste if actually you don't take the goodness out of them and grow.
Yeah.
You just almost put it in a room and shut the door and put another one in the room and shut the door. And
The true meaning of your life, absolutely. You know, is to grow and to explore and, like you said, you know.
And you're never too old to start that journey as well, I think, coming back to that age point when, you know, that feeling of lost can come at any point, but you can still take some positive action.
Yeah. You're still here, so you can still do it, can't you?
that's it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm.
Oh, well, thank you so much for kind of bringing your wisdom and sharing your
journey. Enjoyed it.
That's incredible. So is there anything else you'd sort of like to throw in there just to sort of finish this off a little bit, you know?
I think just be your own cheerleader, you know?
Yeah.
Don't give up, you know, you can change whatever you need to change. It just takes work, you know.
And I think, you know, going back to what you were saying as a parent, you being your own cheerleader, it's the inspiration that you change future generations by the way you relate to yourself, which then has an impact on how you relate to your family, whether that's your children, whether that's your parents, your grandparents, your husband, your wife, your friends. The ripples are immense, really, aren't they?
Yeah. And people see you then, if they see you go therapy and see the difference, then they likely go and, like you say, that ripple effect then.
Because does anybody want to feel rubbish?
Yeah.
Really?
Not at all.
Absolutely not. No. I don't believe that. I believe people just want to find peace, just be content, to be happy.
Yeah.
You know, to have a smile on your face and walk down the road and talk to the person across the road and go, yep, you're right. No hassle.
No.
That's it. Yeah.
It's how do we create ease?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's got to start, I think, on an individual level. And if we're all doing a little bit, that's an awful lot of people creating change.
Yeah.
You know, in the wider context, which means then actually we're all contributing to developing a very different world that we live in.
Yeah.
Change the world, go to therapy.
Yeah.
Some badges made up.
Yes.
T-shirt.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, brilliant.
Well.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Tiff. Okay. It's been incredible, insightful, amazing. You did an amazing job. And I'm sure your clients are absolutely thrilled that you are guiding them like you were guided.
Thank you.
That's lovely.
Thanks a lot.
Wonderful. Thank you.